Thank you all for coming. Some of you are in a university group. Who's in the university gang? Some others are new. Who else is coming for the first time? Om Akash Nirandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Sakshur Niditam Dina Tasmai Sri Gurudev Namah Sri Chaitanya Manojastam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Padamanyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamamas Sri Guru Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Ditham Sam Sahivam Sadvaitam Sabhatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakham Ditham E Krishna Purna Sindha Neena Bandho Jagat Pate O Kesha O Pika Kanta Radha Kanta Nivostate Tata Kamshana Gaurangi Gadhe Vrindavaneshari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Chanamami Hari Priye Vancha Kropitaru Vyascha Kripa Sindho Kire Vacha Svadidana Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Vrohima Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare Again, thank you all for coming. It's good. We'll read something from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is text 16. My book is on page 94. I don't know if your book's going to be different. Asato vidyate bhavo abhavo vidyate satah upayor api drishtontas svanayos tatvadarshibhi. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent material body there is no endurance, and that of the eternal the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. Purport. There is no endurance of the changing body. That the body is changing every moment by the actions and reactions of the different cells is admitted by modern medical science, and thus growth and old age are taking place in the body. But the spirit soul exists permanently, remaining the same despite all changes of the body and the mind. That's the difference between matter and spirit. By nature, the body is ever changing, and the soul is eternal. This conclusion is established by all classes of seers of the truth, both impersonalists and personalists. In the Vishnu Purana 2.12.18, it is stated that Vishnu and his abodes all have self-illuminated spiritual existence. Jyotimsi Vishnur Pavanani Vishnu. The words existent and non-existent refer only to spirit and matter. That is the version of all seers of the truth. The Krishna consciousness movement can therefore be identified as vitalist. Vitalist is, in the scientific community, a pejorative term. It refers to those people who are so scientifically naive that they believe in some sort of ghost in the machine, some sort of consciousness separate from man. They're pejoratively described in this way. So, all right, we'll accept the title vitalists. We are concerned with what's vital. Vital means what's alive, actually. It comes from the Latin word meaning to do with life. There's a difference. Srila Prabhupada once spoke at MIT, and his opening point was that there are so many institutions or so many departments of study within a great institution like MIT. But where is that department which is concerned with discerning the difference between matter and spirit, or between the living body and the dead body? Everyone can, any unscientific person, scientist or non-scientist, can see there's a difference between a living body and a dead body. The obvious difference is the departure of consciousness. Consciousness is going on in some way or other as long as one is alive. Even we know that while you're asleep, you're unconscious, but you're conscious. Or that is to say, consciousness is still there. I've been with people who were in a coma but still showed signs of consciousness, in the sense that, in one example, one lady who was dying but was in a coma. Her face was very tense. You could see that she was in anxiety and in tension. But when she heard the chanting of Hare Krishna, very visibly her features smoothed out, she became peaceful. Because consciousness was still there, although she was totally in a coma. Srila Jiva Goswami, one of the teachers in our line, says that when you're totally knocked out, when you're not dreaming, when you're just really gone, when you come back to normal, you say, "I was really in deep sleep," or "I was." It means I recognize that I was there. I'm here now. When I was sleeping, I was present. And even when I'm in deep sleep, the same I is present. The same I is present. So that consciousness is present throughout. I'm conscious. I remember I had a child's body. Now I have a man's body. Later on, a still older man's body. The body is changing. Science says that even if you take one cell, water is going in and out of it, so many chemical changes are taking place. What do they say? You can't walk into the same stream twice. The body is always changing. But consciousness remains always existent. Someone says, no, consciousness is changing also. Sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're this, sometimes you're that. These are more or less mental states. But the fact of consciousness is the same. Someone said, well, I was, your consciousness will be affected by LSD or by Tylenol or name one of any millions of drugs or medications. That's a fact, but it's my consciousness. The consciousness is always present throughout all the other changes that are going on, either in the body or the mind. According to the Bhagavad Gita, the body that we see is the gross body. And the body that we don't see, the mental body, is subtle. It's called the subtle body. So these two bodies are the coverings for the consciousness, for the soul. So the distinction is made here in Bhagavad Gita. There's that which is temporary and that which is permanent. The temporary comes and goes, and the permanent is always there. When we study their ultimate nature, we say, yes, they're different. Consciousness is fundamentally different from matter. It's far more subtle than matter. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, it's always there. You can't cut it, you can't burn it, you can't drown it, you can't blow it away. You can't even see it. But we know it's there. And we know when it leaves, when consciousness is gone, we say, now the person is dead. Dead means, of course, the consciousness hasn't ceased to exist, but it's left the body and gone somewhere else. This is the beginning of the instruction by the Lord to the living entities who are bewildered by the influence of ignorance. Removal of ignorance involves the reestablishment of the eternal relationship between the worshipped and the worshipable, and the consequent understanding of the difference between part and parcel of the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself. The difference between oneself and the Supreme being understood as the relationship between the part and the whole. Well, this is interesting. People want to understand God, so the advice is given, understand yourself first. If I understand what I am, then I can understand what God is, because I'm part of God. If you study the drop, you can understand something about the ocean. If I understand myself, I understand that I'm aware. I'm not like a brick that just sits there without thoughts, without feelings. I have thoughts, I have feelings, I have desires. This is what it means to be a living being. Even an animal has some sort of thought. I'm going to wait till this person leaves the kitchen, then I'm going to jump up on the table and get the milk. They think, they have feelings, they have desires, and we also do. And therefore, if you consider God to be the source of all the living beings, God also has thoughts, God also has feelings, God also has desires. God also is a conscious living being. God is also a person. So in this way, by studying ourselves, we can understand something about God, but the difference is, I'm a tiny person, and God is the greatest person. I'm part of God, and God is the whole must be greater, and the part must be smaller. This is the difference, but otherwise, in terms of our general characteristics, they're the same. Vedanta Sutras, as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme has been accepted as the origin of all emanations. In other words, the source of everything. This comes from that, that comes from something else, that comes from... When you come to the final original source of everything, that's the Supreme. Such emanations are experienced by superior and inferior natural sequences. People sometimes puzzle over what that line means. Experienced as superior and inferior natural sequences. Maybe those who are in the front would like to move up because people may come and want to join us and give them some space. And I'll come up from all the way. And while we're looking at practical things, if your cell phone is good, you can please check that it's in silent mode. Now, those who are way in the back by the door, why don't you come now a little bit forward so that more people who come through the door will have a place. And they can sit in front of the door and block the next people in their center. So superior and inferior superior and inferior natural sequences means that the Lord has superior energies and inferior energies. The superior energies are the living beings who are conscious, who have volition, will. And the inferior energy of the Lord is matter. The earth, the water, fire, which have no consciousness, which have no experience, don't have the capability to experience anything, they just sit. The conscious living being is superior because it manipulates matter. By consciousness, I construct one of these microphones. By consciousness, I say I'm going to move it this way or that way. Or by consciousness, I say to my finger, come on, scratch my head, and the finger does. The finger is just matter, but it's activated by consciousness. So consciousness is superior. Just as the boss says, okay, I want you to get in the truck and drive over there and drop this off, you say, yes, sir. Why? He's superior. So by his instruction, you're acting. So consciousness is superior. It's directing. Finger, come here. The finger is coming here. Or the consciousness is directing the construction of a house or what have you. So superior energy and inferior energy, but they're both energies of Krishna, or energies of the Supreme. The living beings belong to the superior nature, as it will be revealed in the seventh chapter. Although there's no difference between the energy and the energetic is accepted as the supreme, and energy, or nature, is accepted as the subordinate. By energetic, Srila Prabhupada means the source of the energy. It doesn't mean very active. It means that there's energy which is coming from a source. The sun is the source of the sunlight. So the sunlight is the energy, and the sun is energetic. Or the electricity is energy, and the dynamo is energetic. It's the source of the energy. So we have inferior energy, and we have superior energy, but there must be a source from which those energies emanate. So that source is the energetic, or Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point that, in one sense, there's no difference between energy and energetic. There's no meaning to energy without the energetic, and vice versa. There's no meaning to the sun without the sunlight, and there's no question of sunlight without the sun. And the sun is hot, the sunlight is hot, the sun is bright, the sunlight is bright. So they're really one in their nature. But still, the sun is the source, and the
sunlight is the emanation or the energy.
So when we speak of God, God means that He is the source of everything, and there has to be an everything that He's the source of. There's no meaning to God without energy. Just as there's no meaning to king without power. King has to have powers. The power to do this, the power to do that. If he's powerless, what's the meaning of being king? They're electing a president. Means they're giving one man some powers. If the president has no power, who cares whether he's elected or not? President means there must be some power. He can veto a bill, he can do whatever he does. But when we speak of God, he has to have power. And when we speak of power, there must be someone exercising the power. So there's Krishna, who's the source of all energy, and then there's superior energy, living beings, superior energy, matter. The living entities, therefore, are always subordinate to the Supreme Lord, as in the case of the master and the servant, or the teacher and the taught. Such clear knowledge is impossible to understand under the spell of ignorance. And to drive away such ignorance, the Lord teaches the Bhagavad Gita for the enlightenment of all living entities for all time. This is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, to give us clear understanding of ourselves, clear understanding of Krishna, or God, and clear understanding of the relationship between ourselves and Krishna, and how to act in that relationship. By acting in that relationship, we make our life successful. And it's an art that Krishna teaches how to act in relationship with Him in every stage of life, in every phase, in every occupation, all the time, by change of consciousness, by acting in a manner congenial to Krishna consciousness, by doing everything favorable to develop Krishna consciousness, by avoiding some things that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. It's a kind of cultivation. By cultivating this consciousness, we can revive our original nature as spiritual beings. Now we're more or less in material conception. I'm thinking I'm American, or I'm Indian, I'm white, I'm black, I'm this, I'm that. I'm young, I'm old, I'm thin or fat. But this is not who we really are. These are bodily designations. I'm not the body, I'm the spiritual spark within the body. The body is Krishna's inferior energy, and I'm Krishna's superior energy. By hearing from Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, we can all understand all these things very well and make progress in our spiritual life, which is the real purpose of human life. Simply eating and sleeping, mating and defending are activities we have in common with the animals. But the ability to inquire about spiritual life is the unique feature of living being. So we should take advantage of that prerogative, that privilege, and make the best use of this human life. And we have lots of time, so maybe we'll give you some of that time for questions. That looks like a question. Yes.
Do the celestial bodies have consciousness?
Do the celestial bodies have consciousness? The sun and the moon and Venus and so on? They're like us. They're planets. The planet is, as you say, a celestial body. So it's a body. It's a body of matter. Some of it's luminous. Some of it's like this. And some of it's like that. It has its different features. But there's also consciousness on these planets, as there is on Earth. It's not that all the planets are vacant and just one of them has living beings. From the Vedic literature, we understand that all of these planets have living beings there. But their bodies are different. We can live, even here we have different sort of bodies, like people from England as soon as the weather gets warm and nice, they say, oh, it's so hot. There's a heat wave going on in London right now, and I'm sweating. Because they're used to a colder climate. And in India, when it's still warmer than here, then people are happy. It's very nice weather. But the Eskimos would be screaming. So there are different environments, and there are living beings suited to all of those environments. Just recently I saw some item that they discovered, some sort of creature in the midst of a glacier or something like that. Did anyone see that? Yeah. However many miles down into the ice, they found some living creatures. Not big ones, but living beings. That means that life can be sustained even in the most freezing atmosphere. And from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that on the atmosphere of the sun, they're also living beings. Scientists are busy poking around looking for planets that might have atmospheres suitable for sustaining life. But what they have in mind is life like what we have here. But there's no rule that life has to be as it is here. From the Vedic literature, we can understand just from this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you can't overheat the soul. It doesn't have a temperature at which it evaporates. You can't cut it. You can't freeze it. Because the soul is beyond material conditions. It's the body that freezes or overheats or gets caught and burned. So the soul can go anywhere. Sarvagata in the Bhagavad Gita said that it can go anywhere. So the sun, the moon, Venus, all the planets, they're living beings as there are here. But the planets themselves are made of matter. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
As we are in Kali Yuga, right
here. A little loud, please.
As we are in Kali Yuga here. Does it mean it's Kali Yuga before the universe?
As we're in Kali Yuga here.
Is it Kali Yuga in the whole universe?
Is it Kali Yuga in the whole universe? Yes. Kali Yuga in the whole universe. But time is different in different parts of the universe. When we read about Brahma's life in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we find out that his one day consists of 4,300,000 times 1,000 of our years. And his night is of the same duration. Well, he lives 100 years, we live 100 years, but his life, his 100 years, are a different story. So then our Kali Yuga, 432,000 years, is like the blink of an eye of an eyelash for the blink of an eye for Lord Brahma. Or maybe Kali Yuga for a moment or two. But for us it drags on and on. Okay. Something else? Who else might have a question? Yes.
Could you please comment on the Christian notion that Christ is coming again?
Can I comment on the Christian belief that Christ is coming again? Yes, according to the Bible, Christ is coming again. I don't know much about Christian theology. It's really beyond my area of expertise. But from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that Krishna or Krishna's incarnations come again and again. Why? Because you start some spiritual movement or you give some spiritual teaching and everyone gets very excited about it or gradually it catches on and things are progressive. And then after some time it winds down. After some time it gets adulterated and people say, I think this and I think that, and everybody has his own idea. And then the thing is lost over some time. So then Krishna comes again and revives it. He comes to help the devotees and to curb down the miscreants and to reestablish the principles of Sanatana Dharma or eternal engagement, the eternal engagement of the living entity. Living entity
atheists think that their engagement is to make money, to have a good time, to party it up, or to engage in some social cause or philanthropic cause or scientific research or whatever it may be. Family duties, social duties, national duties. But from the point of view of eternity, these are so much less important. These are necessary, all right. We have to maintain our family, we have to eat, we have to sleep. But that's not our business in life. Our real business is spiritual realization. So when spiritual realization is lost and everyone is busy in material activities, then Krishna comes again to reestablish the principles of spiritual life. Sometimes he comes personally, sometimes he sends his son or representative. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. How will you equate this to Kajuga at the end of the universe? To Kajuga at the end of the universe.
How does the Kali Yuga end?
Yeah.
Well, that's described in several places in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's things get duller and duller, not duller and duller, more and more degraded. The human beings become, their lifetimes become very short, they become dull-headed, foolish, they become more and more vicious, they become cannibalistic, they become so low that you can't talk to them. Just like anyone ever tried to talk about spiritual realization to a heroin addict, or you can't really say very much without to just have philosophical discussion with heroin addict or cocaine addict, or it's not really possible. So people will be like that at the end of Kali Yuga. They'll be vicious. Right now we do things like we kill one another on one pretext or another. We kill people from other countries, or we kill children in the womb, because that's good for social stability and economic welfare of the mother, and so on and so on. Later they'll just kill their family members for one reason or another. Maybe they're hungry, so they'll have a kid for dinner or whatever, and there'll be some sort of rationalization why, what's wrong with it, I don't believe in it, but I respect the rights of others to make their own choices. There'll be a rationale somehow or other. They'll be so dull at the end of Kali Yuga that there'll be no question of elevating them by spiritual instruction. Then Krishna comes as an avatar, Kalki avatar. The Kalki avatar sees that there's no instructing these people, but they can be killed. And killed by me, they'll get liberation. So that's Kalki's job. He basically kills everybody off. And then Satyuga begins again with sages who've been more or less hiding in the woods. They start things from an elevated platform. By the way, there seems to be some Kalki avatar floating around in South India. Anybody know about that? There's been time to time people come along and present themselves as avatars and give themselves a following and make some propaganda and fool innocent people. At the present moment, some Kalki avatar has come. I guess he hasn't gotten the word that the real Kalki avatar is not supposed to come for another, what is it? How many years? 428,000 years. So he's a little early. And he's, the real Kalki avatar is supposed to come on a white horse with a great sword. This Kalki avatar is basically come with his wife. Could we move forward again, because more people are coming back? Thank you very much. I And we have all this empty real estate over here, also, which could be occupied as going for a good price today. I think we still need more space because we're filling it up. There we go. We have this space here, this real estate can be occupied. And then the next thing is those nearby pillars can move forward. We get your darshan. And that's pretty good now. Is that all right for your question? Yes.
If all animals existed at the beginning of creation, how would souls get into an animal body at the beginning of creation?
If all souls, if all animals or all creatures exist at the beginning of creation, how do souls get into this or that particular body, animal body? That's not a difficult issue. Say the beginning of creation means after the end of the previous creation. So, what's the end of the previous creation? Everything is destroyed. There's a big cataclysm. Everything's finished. And then the living entities are not dissolved, but dissolved the way sugar is dissolved. It doesn't lose its identity as sugar, but it's mixed in with your milkshake or your whatever it is. So the living entities, at the time of dissolution of the cosmos, they're reserved within the body of the Mahavishnu. So they're sort of in suspended animation. Nothing's happening with them. They're just waiting for, like at night, when the night falls, we all go into suspended animation. We lie down on our beds and couches, and nothing happens for the next few hours, and then we come out again. So what do when we come out? We do something according to what we were doing before we took rest. If I was thinking about whatever work I have to do, the next morning I get up and I do it. So wherever we were, we pick up again. If I had $20 in my pocket the night before, I wake up the next morning, not that I have 100, I have the same $20. So the living entities, they have a certain karma, they have a certain mentality, and then when the night falls, everything's all right, hold it. Then the day comes again. All right, get started again. And they start where they left off. So the animal starts off again, animal life. The human person who's eligible for human life begins again as a human being. Wherever we left off.
And then how do you fall down in so many different species?
How do you?
How does a soul fall down into so many different species?
Well, that's also, the animals automatically advance. All the lower creatures automatically advance because they all strictly follow nature's laws. The tree always acts like a tree, the tiger always acts like a tiger, the elephant always acts like an elephant, the mosquito like a mosquito. They all follow exactly like nature's laws because they don't have any freedom to disobey them. They have to act that way. Where is their freedom? In human life. The human life can act like a sage. The human being can act like a sage, or the human being can act like a dog. Or the human being can act like a tiger. Or the human being can act like a bear. He can act so many different ways. So if he develops the consciousness of a tiger or of a bear or whatever it is. Sometimes we see a person and say, my God, that guy's looking just like a pig. And he even looks like a pig. You know, his face is piggish. It's everything but wank, wank, wank. So he has that already, the subtle body of a pig. He'll eat anything and everything, and he's just no cleanliness, just eat it and lie in it. So he's already a pig in his mind. And at the time of death, the body, gross body is destroyed, but the mind lives on. The subtle body stays with the soul. and around that subtle body, the gross body is constructed again. But it's according to the subtle body he's developed. So he becomes a pig in his next life.
Right, like a pig, a tiger, an elephant, consciousness are pretty easy to identify. Mm. Like what about like an amoeba or something? How does someone fall down to that?
Pretty low. You have to be pretty low to be an amoeba. There are people who, we were talking about heroin addicts and so on. There are people, their whole life is basically to sit there and just go. And you can look at all the living entities, you can figure out something, like the flashy dressers, they may take birth as zebras, or what do they call that? The dinner jacket people, the suit type people, they may come back as a penguin. Yeah, coattails. Come back as penguins. There's some desire. Why are all these different species there? Because we have different desires. There are living beings who desire to drink blood. The mosquito body is there. There are living beings, human beings who really, just, I love my meat. They can get tiger body. There are others who they think it's really cool to be naked, expose their bodies. Well, they can be trees and stand there for naked for a few thousand years. There are all sorts of different bodies in which the living being can satisfy his different desires.
And they automatically progress to the human body?
They automatically progress because if I become an amoeba or a pig or a horse or what have you, I always act exactly like an amoeba or a pig or a horse. I never break nature's laws. You never see a tiger stealing oranges. So they automatically progress till they get to the human life. Then in the human life they have freedom, which used properly enables one to elevate himself and obtain liberation from material existence. Used improperly, it sends us back down again. Well, I gave you that chance, and you didn't want to use it for human activities, for spiritual inquiry. You thought, well, what's wrong with living as a pig? Pigs have it good. Okay, you can have it good. Yes?
How do the celestial bodies fit into that?
How do celestial bodies fit into that? Yeah, the living beings, human beings, can be promoted to what's called the heavenly planets. What are these heavenly planets? Are these heavenly planets imaginary places? No. There are different standards of living, even here. I don't know what you consider the heavenly planets on Earth, Beverly Hills or... Beverly Hills is actually a lousy place, but there are places that are... There are places that are relatively really nice, and you're living in a the smallest plot of land is 5 acres. Your zoning is such that you can't even buy a place of less than 5 acres, and everything has woods and streams and parks and lakes and places like that. And where whatever you need is there, and so on. And then there are places that are really, there are places that are where life is really hell. Right now, I guess maybe Iraq qualifies. You never know when someone's going to bomb your home or shoot your family member. It was Vietnam before, or so many places where life could, right now, I guess it's Galveston, Texas, where it's watery hell. So there's always some place where people are suffering and it's miserable and you don't know what's going to hit me next. And then there are other places where, what did I do to deserve this? So the heavenly planets are residential places where people can live when they perform many, many pious activities. there are punya karma, pious activities, things that one can do that purify one's life or give you spiritual credit. Among the pious, like to give charity to worthy people is a pious credit. You don't make anything out of it, but you get spiritual credit. You did something for the welfare of others. If you plant trees by the side of the road to give shade and shelter to the passersby, that's a pious activity. If you open a hospital for the treatment of the sick people, or an orphanage for the care of the orphans, or you open a school for the instruction of students, these are all pious activities. There are other, many in the Vedic literature, there are different sacrifices that one can perform, yajna, dana, tapa, charity, sacrifice, austerity. By these activities, one gets punya karma. Just for example, the Kumbh Mela is there, a great spiritual festival that's held once every 12 years in different places. And people go there and they bathe in the holy river and they hear discourses given by saintly people. And they undergo some inconvenience because it's right in the middle of the winter and it's physically not so comfortable. But they get great spiritual credit. So by piling up your spiritual credit, it's something like bank credit. If you get enough bank credit, you can buy a nice home in a good place. So you get, by spiritual credit, you can become eligible to go live in the heavenly planets in that purified atmosphere of pious people. But it's temporary. People may be very anxious to go to such a heavenly place, but you can't stay there forever. Just as people here, they're very eager to have a home in a nice place, maybe San Diego or maybe some other place. But even if they get a nice home with security and so many things, you can't stay there forever. Finally, you have to leave. And at least death comes and then you all have to go. So it's that way with the heavenly planets also. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that when our punya, our pious credit, is used up, because while you're living there, the meter is ticking. Every day that you're there, it's cost you, it's charged, you're charged, your account is charged. All right, that much pious credit. Something like your credit card. So then when you have zero balance, you have to come back to earth again. Then again, you can build up your pious credit, or you can run into deficit. If you do vicious things, you steal from the orphans, you cut down trees that give shade and shelter to people, you steal from the people that deserve to have money for their needs, you cause pain and suffering to others, and various other things that you can do to erase your credit, to destroy your credit, to put you in deficit. In the old days, they used to have debtor's prison. They don't have that these days. But in any case, those who build up a spiritual deficit or a negative balance, in the next life, they can't go to heavenly planets. Rather, they have to go down to worlds where things are worse than here. And while they're there, every day that's passing, it's like a prison sentence, every day that's passing is one day less that you have to stay there. So then again you come up here. So this is the place where we are now, is a place where you can either destroy your credit or build your credit, or you hit the jackpot, you go beyond all credit and go to the spiritual world and stay there forever. This life is the opportunity. So if we throw away the opportunity, then we're very unfortunate. And if we use it, fortunately, yes.
It's a thing called anti-matter.
Anti?
It's a thing called anti-matter.
Yeah.
So, but it's the soul.
Is the It's all anti-matter?
Yeah.
Well, Srila Prabhupada, in a book called Easy Journey to Other Planets, took advantage of some announcement concerning anti-matter to identify the soul as being an anti-material particle. Now, strictly in terms of physics, there is something called antimatter, which is not spirit. It's a different thing. There's like positive and negative, and there are positive and negative charges. So there's matter and antimatter, but the antimatter is really just matter in reverse, or a different kind of matter. But the soul is beyond both matter and antimatter. Yes, will you have a question?
Yeah, if after living all these lives and finally getting it right and going back home, back to God, is there a danger of having to come back, or?
Is there a danger in the spiritual world of having to come back? It's not very dangerous there.
So when you're there, you're there.
When you're there, you're there.
For good.
Yeah, you're there for good.
Okay.
Don't worry. There was another question in this direction, yes?
I have a couple of questions. First
sure.
question is that something near and dear to your heart, how many languages and countries the books of Prabhupada are being translated?
Well, countries, I don't know how many there are going on, and I believe the number of languages is in the neighborhood of 90 now. They're publishing in Chinese, Japanese, Arabic, Farsi, a whole lot of Indian languages. Urdu, all the major European languages, some of the minor European languages. Satyanarayan Prabhu is in charge of various. What languages are you publishing?
Just name the first one: Arabic, Farsi, Japanese, Chinese, Burmese, Japanese. It's 14.
You're publishing in 14. This is our Satyanarayan Prabhu. He's publishing, in charge of publishing in 14 languages. Then we have other parts of the world, more languages, about 90. If you go, there's a website, bbt.info, and you can get the updates there, what languages we're publishing and what's going on with the BBT. We recently published a book in Braille, I believe in the Czech language. The language is Czech, but it's Braille. When you see the book, it's about this thick, because the pages for a Braille book are thick, so that those little dots can be embossed on the page. So that's a recent development. Of course, we're also publishing in digital media. So we're doing something, but we need to do a lot more. There's lots of room, anyone who'd like to help with the BBC and the fact that publishing in different languages. Prabhupada was very fond of publishing books about Krishna in so many languages. You had another question?
Yes. Can you describe the special meaning of this golden age that we're in?
Which meaning of what?
Golden age, because of Lord Chaitanya.
Golden age, yeah. Srila Prabhupada referred to some prediction. It's somewhere in the literature. That in Kali Yuga there'll be a golden age of 10,000 years when there's Krishna consciousness by the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada compared it to an eddy. You know what an eddy is? A stream is flowing, say, to the north, but someplace there's like a little countercurrent that's going to the south. So that's called an eddy. So Kali Yuga is basically going south. It's going down. Everything becomes degraded. But there's a countercurrent introduced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's supposed to last for 10,000 years. So it's the golden age of Krishna consciousness. And then everything goes to hell after that. So you don't want to be around for after that. We're fortunate we have the recent appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is still more recent appearance of Srila Prabhupada. We can take advantage of this Krishna consciousness movement. The there are certain political candidates for change. That change is on the material platform, whatever change there may be. But real change is to change from material life to spiritual life. So if you want to be a real agent for change, you don't want to see 4 more years of materialistic life, then vote for Krishna. I think non-profit organizations are not supposed to promote candidates, but we have our permanent candidate that we want to vote for always. Now, are they waiting for me? Am I waiting for them? Or we just have some time that we can use for more discussion?
There's more time.
There's more time. All right. Who else might have a question, I wonder? Mm-hmm.
An
email about Krishna's flute.
Yeah, and I thought it was always
did she attach an MP3 file?
But I didn't know there were 3 flutes. There is Vamshi, Venu, and Murli. And Prabhupada had once said that flute is personified as his person.
Yeah.
Now, are these 3 different people for the 3 different flutes?
Now, there's a question I've never been asked before. Krishna has at least 3 different flutes, Vamshi, Murli, in that way. So, and the flute is a person, so are there 3 different persons? Or is it the same person in 3 different dresses? I think that's a question you'll have to ask Krishna. Krishna has auspicious lines.
Lines on the feet.
Yes.
What do they imply, and we can meditate on them, right?
Like, yes, Krishna has different lines on his feet that form different symbols, and what do they mean? And we can meditate on them. Yes, we can meditate on the color of Krishna's feet, the symbols on Krishna's feet. Everything about Krishna is a subject for meditation. Krishna has. Specifically, he has a goad for driving elephants. One very important symbol, he has thunderbolts on his feet. When he was dancing on the heads of the Kaliya serpent, the Kaliya god really got the thunderbolt. So that was mercy for him. Those thunderbolts on Krishna's feet destroy all the influence of Maya, all the sufferings of material existence, all the illusions of real world can be destroyed by the thunderbolts on the lotus feet of Krishna. Your instructions, sir.
There's questions
with the question. You can read more about the symbols on Krishna's feet in different parts of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes.
If Vyasadeva was an incarnation of Krishna, as I've read in the Bhagavatam, then why did he need Narada's instruction?
If Vyasadeva was an incarnation of Krishna, why did he need Narada Muni's instructions? Yes, he's setting the example that even the incarnation of Krishna will accept the bona fide spiritual master. Even Krishna, when he came, he accepted a spiritual master. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came, accepted a spiritual master. And then we think, well, I don't need a spiritual master, I'll figure it all out. Anything else? Yes? What if you're never ready to read anything as confidential as the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? Then you'll have 9 other wonderful cantos to read. Yeah, even first canto. Even first canto, first verse. If we can even fully become absorbed in one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can go back to God. There's so, every verse, every word of Bhagavatam is as good as Krishna himself. Yes. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says one shouldn't expect the results of activities. But we may, as human beings, have the desire to go back to Godhead. Even that's, of course, that desire is good. That's not the results Krishna's speaking about. He means material results. If you aspire to go back to Godhead, the devotees aspire to go back to Godhead. Why? To serve Krishna. So Krishna never says, never desire to serve me. No, that's good. Everyone can desire to go back to Godhead and render service to Krishna. That's fine. Bhavamad Bhakta, Krishna said, become a devotee. Any other thing?
Krishna, 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 Krish